Hello and welcome to Rapid Access Radio, presented by ProTech Central, Episode 10, October 2025. I'm Sean Mullen, your host. Today's guest is Chris Peterson of Vector One. This runs just about 31 minutes. Friends, today we are visiting with Chris Peterson from Vector Firm, and I've gotten to know Chris over the past several months as I have enrolled in one of his courses, and I have really enjoyed it. And as I've been sitting online learning from Chris's wisdom, I thought, you know what? This would be really cool to interview him for Rapid Access Radio presented by ProTech Central. And so today, here he is. So Chris, welcome to the microphones of Rapid Access Radio presented by ProTech Central.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Great. You know, Chris, I'm just kind of curious, how did you come into deciding that this was going to be your niche, this was going to be your calling card, and setting up Vector Firm?
That's about three answers popped in my head just then. It was actually 15 years ago this month that I started the company. At a high level, I always knew I wanted to do some type of consulting. When I say always, I mean since college. I have a mechanical engineering degree and didn't think I'd get into sales. Didn't even think about it, and that's the path that I took. And from there, when I entered into the security technology space, I worked for a manufacturer. I got brought over from healthcare IT. And I was vice president of sales for a manufacturer, and our job, we were mostly a DoD type of contractor, and we were shifting into the security world, and we were trying to build a channel. And one of the things that I learned pretty quickly is that most of the folks out there, most of the channel partners that we were building, this is 2004, 5, 6, so 20 years ago or so.
Right.
They didn't have their salespeople didn't really have a fundamental process on how to sell. A lot of them were not trained and didn't know the science of selling, and the companies didn't have the resources or the time to do it, really, to train them. Yeah. So I thought, boy, this is a heck of an opportunity. And so I thought about the business, but I didn't really have the guts to do it. I shouldn't say I didn't have the guts. That's probably a harsh way to say it. I didn't have the appetite for risk. Do it.
Okay.
And then in 2010, I was executive vice president of global sales and marketing for a manufacturer, and 2010 was a bad time.
Yeah.
And my boss knew what I wanted to do. I had shared with him about a year and a half earlier what I wanted to do, how I wanted to build a business like this. And he came up with a brilliant idea. Because he needed to let me go. He needed to fire me. He did let me go. But his idea was, because, I was my income was number two behind his, the whole company.
Oh, I see.
And 2010 was a terrible year financially.
Yeah,
And so he said, listen, I got an issue. I'll never forget. He said, I got a real problem. I got to let you go. I said, sounds like I got the problem.
Yeah.
And we laughed. He says, but I have a solution. He said, we need to keep you around because of your knowledge. And also, in his words, my investors like you a lot, and they would be upset if I let you go. So how about you start that business you've been talking about, and we become your first customer, and I'll put you on a retainer. I'll take you off a payroll and put you on retainer, and you go find some other clients. And it was the best. I would not have this business today if it wasn't. Well, I shouldn't say it that way, but it was a heck of a way to start a business, because I had a client before I even incorporated a company. And so that's how I started it. And from there, it just, you know, that was 2010 and just took off, really.
And you haven't looked back.
Haven't looked back. 2011 was the end. It was September 2010. 2011, my income was about a little bit more than half of what it was previously, you know, for the previous few years, but not much more than, it was about half, let's say. And then after that, my income has been greater than it was before I started a business. So I had 1 year that was down. We dipped in the savings a bit. Yep, and since then, it's just been, it's been very fruitful. So.
Oh, wow. What a great story.
And yeah. I was lucky, you know, it was a self-serving idea from my boss, but it certainly did help me.
Yeah. You know, I like to say that, you kind of create your own luck. And, I think, you do things right. You work hard. Obviously you, are a great relational, person in terms of these investors who liked you, and certainly your boss did too. And I think that those things all conspired to create that opportunity for you. And so that's a great story.
I appreciate that.
So you sell to, or I should say you help, fire, life safety, security companies sell in essentially a technical audience. And so I'm curious, what are some of the common challenges that salespeople in this particular space face when, you know, they're communicating with other technical professionals, and how can they overcome some of those challenges?
Yeah, boy. So specifically about, well, let me step back for a second and I'll get directly to the technical buyers and the technical departments. But one of the biggest challenges that salespeople have in this space, security, professional AV, system integrator, they're constantly reacting to things. System integrators are in a good spot right now. The world is booming.
I agree.
the world is booming, right? So the salespeople.
I agree.
yeah. You guys are doing it the right way. A lot of folks are just, not to say they're doing it the wrong way, but they're just reacting to a good marketplace, right?
Yeah.
And so the salespeople's the biggest problem that they have is that they're being reactionary because they're unable to manage their days. Their days are managing them.
So
when they go and visit with people who are technical, whether it's someone who's technical, whether it's somebody who can't spell the word technical, it doesn't matter. Sadly,
I get
it. They respond exactly the same way to them. And they're unable to prepare for, well, I don't want to say they're not able. And they're all working their tails off 50, 60 hours a week.
Oh, easy.
It's just that they're not being strategic and proactive towards their marketplace. And if they were, they could be doing 150%, 250% of what they're doing today. But it takes them to say no and manage their activity differently. So with that said, they're responding and they're talking with technical buyers in the same way they talk to everybody. And that is simply responding and asking rather than being proactive and telling. Yes. And I know it might, you know, historically, well, salespeople aren't supposed to tell, they're supposed to listen and ask. Well, we're in a different age now. And yes, we need to ask and listen. Absolutely. But we also need to advise, we need to guide, we need to challenge our customers. And if we don't, they'll just go online to buy. Why would they use a human being?
Exactly. Yeah.
So with all that said, when they are in front of a technical buyer, if it is a small percentage of salespeople who are proactive and strategic, some of the challenges that they have is not understanding that personality type, first of all. Technical people, first of all, when a salesperson gets in front of them, they're extremely skeptical. That the salesperson's not going to know what they're doing. They're going to assume that the meeting, if it's scheduled for 1 hour, will take 2 hours. They feel like they're going to get nothing done because they're going to have to explain to the salesperson everything. they don't want to socialize for the most part. They want to get right to the point. And salespeople treat them just like they treat everybody else. They go in and they start asking a whole lot of questions. They wonder why the customers look back on them and pause before they answer.
Yeah.
And the fact is they're waiting to give the right answer. So technical buyers are different. So with that said, if they can just prepare for this and understand that, okay, I'm going to go visit with an IT director, that IT director probably falls under this type of persona. They're going to want to be on time. They're going to want to get out on time. They're not going to want to socialize. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but probably not. They're going to want to get to the point. They're going to want, if I throw out a fact, they're going to challenge that fact. If I say something like 2 to 3, they're going to think that I don't know what I'm talking about. What is it? Is it 2 or is it 3?
Yeah.
If I say 11 o'clock EST and it's daylight savings time and it was supposed to be EDT, they're going to think I'm incompetent. That's the way technical buyers think.
Yeah.
So they need to understand these things and go in with that persona and be able to handle it in that way. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think that it's all about mindset and preparation, right? And I really like the way you phrase it, that the day manages them rather than they manage the day. And I know for our team at Protex, that's been a transformational mind shift. To say, yes, we can tell. Yes, we can dictate. And I really appreciate you bringing that to light because I think it's really important. You know, your associate, Gannon, who is another pro, you guys talk about habits of sales excellence. And I think this is important because there are some key habits that sales professionals should cultivate and sustain over time in order to be success. Might you share a couple of your habits that you think that the top performers exhibit and maintain regardless of whether they're up or they're down?
Oh, that's a great way to put it, whether they're up or whether they're down, because we've got a session that we teach called The Edges. And what that means is when things are going great and when things are going poorly, that's where you differentiate yourself. Everyone does the same in the middle, but when things are going great and when things are going poorly, that's what, some habits. So that word is so important. You got to get, the activity needs to become habit. So it needs to go from a planned activity to a behavior, to a routine, to a habit. And, so some of the things, preparation, there needs to, and it needs to be a routine. You can't think every time I have a meeting to prepare for, oh, well, what do I do? No, it needs to be a checklist of routine. Well, the first thing I have to do is where is the meeting? What time is it? Who's going to be there? Okay. Right, what's the purpose of the meeting? Okay. Let's research the company. What's been happening in the news, whatever that is. I don't care what it is.
Sure. Sure.
It's just one of the best pieces of advice I got is right when I started selling 31 years ago. And the gentleman told me, define a process of what you do every week. And I don't care what the process is. Just get one. And it was, and to me, you know, an analytical thinker, I'm like, no, tell me the perfect process. You just got to do it. And so preparation, debriefing after meetings, huge habit.
Oh.
And defining what the action item is going to be afterwards. It's amazing when I call somebody in 3 months or I text them because they told me text is the best thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I see, I'll get hold of you in August how's the middle of August. Okay. So we'll schedule a call moving into September, October. So I do reach out to them. And then on the call, I remember to ask something about maybe an anniversary or a swim meet or something that their daughter had.
Right.
They freak out. They're like, my gosh, you have the best memory. Well, I documented that stuff. It was really easy, especially today with artificial intelligence tools.
Oh, yes.
Just throw it right into your CRM, but it needs to be a habit. You get done with that call, and it doesn't have to be immediately. People are thinking, well, I can't do it right afterwards. I got another meeting to go to. Okay, maybe at the end of the day, maybe at the beginning of the next day. But within 24 hours, have everything debriefed in your CRM system and have the actions defined. Follow-up needs to be a habit, and setting that follow-up. If you ask me why I'm successful at sales, that's the first thing I would tell you is I follow up. I never miss a follow-up. In 31 years, I have never missed a follow-up. I promise you that. I would love to say charisma and intelligence. It's not that. It's follow-up.
Well, you are a mechanical engineer, so we give you a discount on those two things.
Thank you very much. But those are the type, there's nothing sexy about it, really. Those are the types of, I love getting into a habit of prospecting, where every week you have a minimum, every single week. Yep. And you should have a defined amount of targets that you're pursuing. But every week, let's say you're reaching out to, you know, a minimum of eight prospective accounts on your targeting list. Yeah. And I'm going to do it every day, every Tuesday morning, you know, whether it's in person, via email, text, phone, LinkedIn, whatever. And those are the types of habits that really create, professional development, you know, having a habit of doing that maybe. And there needs to be a time of the week you do all these things.
That's
knowing that, hey, guess what? I do professional development, or I do prospecting. I mentioned already every Tuesday morning from 7:30 to 10 o'clock in the morning. All right. Well, what happens if the biggest prospect says, I want to meet with you that time? It's the only time I can meet. Okay. I'm going to move it from my calendar to another time.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to delete it.
Right.
So
Reschedule.
Those are the types of habits that, and Gannon would probably say exactly the same, the same thing. Because he's not a habit person. He has to create those. He's a, hey, what can I do right now to have the most fun? And he's created habits to keep them in a routine.
Oh, that's great. You know, friends, we're visiting with Chris Peterson from Vector Firm and just having a great conversation on professionalism and selling in this security, fire, life safety space, and some of the techniques and discipline that's necessary to be successful there. And so, Chris, I know that you advocate for using breakup emails with unresponsive clients. Could you just share with our listeners a little bit about this strategy and its effectiveness for maybe re-engaging potential clients and customers?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because I just there's a blog post I follow, and I made a comment on the blog about it, and the author of the blog and of this post challenged me on it, and I didn't want to go back and forth with this guy, so I didn't say anything. But essentially what a breakup email is if you're reaching out to somebody multiple times, and I think everybody should have a limit, or you're just going to keep going, draw a line in the sand. If it's prospecting, maybe you say, I'm going to reach out to somebody for 15 months, or maybe you say, I'm going to reach out to somebody 12 times, whatever.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to break up with them. If you're following up on a proposal, maybe, hey, I'm going to follow up with them 10 times or 6 times, whatever that is, boom, then you break up with them. What I mean by breaking up, and you can do it email, you can do it text, whatever works, but just let them know, hey, I'm going to assume that you're not interested anymore. And say it just like that. So this will be my last correspondence about this topic. Don't get me wrong. Love to work with you. But I feel like I'm just being a pest.
Yeah.
Continuing to reach out. If I'm wrong, and this is something we simply should pick up in a few months or next year, let me know. Boom, and send it.
Yeah.
And so here's what it does. And what I'm going to say last is the most important part. Usually people are just busy and they don't respond. Mm-hmm. They'd like to respond, but they don't. And if you position an email in such a way, they'll respond And they'll say something like, you know what? Yeah, we found a different path. We're not interested. Great. That's a win because you don't have to waste your time anymore.
Exactly. Right.
More often than not, what they'll do is say, hey, I'm so sorry. Look, this isn't a priority anymore. Let's touch base in January. Okay. I'm going to now you got a plan, right? Now you're moving in January.
Right.
I would guess that, and when I say I would guess, I have some anecdotal data here. I should probably get some empirical data, but it's about a quarter to a third of people respond. Now you might think a quarter to a third, that's terrible. You understand it was a zero.
It was a zero.
For 10 times. You reach out to them 10 times and now you're getting a 30% response rate. That's pretty darn good.
I would agree.
So the last thing I'll say about it, I want you to think about when you're a consumer and you have a salesperson that is extremely professional and persistent. And the example that I use is a gentleman who I, since 2018, I've been buying my clothes from, my professional clothes. I've been buying suits and sports coats and shirts, all that stuff from him. And before 2018, he reached out to me for 16 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was so persistent. And he would get my name from, because he's great and he's phenomenal. I bet I was referred to him by 13 different people, right? Because I live in Orlando and, you know, certain crowd you socialize, hey, you need to talk to Chris Peterson. He was so persistent. Every time he would call me and he would email me. Every time he called and emailed, I would think, I really need to talk to Tom. I love the way Chris looks. I love the way Patrick looks. These are my friends that referred me, right? I love the way George looks.
Their suits
are so sharp. I need to call this guy, Tom. Tom's so professional. He's going to email me again next month. So I'm busy right now. I'll get back to him next month when he emails me. When he calls me next week, I'll call him back. I'm too busy right now. His persistence worked against him.
Oh, wow.
If he ever emailed me and said, man, I've been calling on you for the last 6 months, this is the last email, I would have picked up the phone at that moment and called him. So I would have started buying suits from him like in 2004, not 18. I'll tell you a funny story. The reason I was speaking in Seattle. A client of mine paid me to come up and speak at, you know, this big group. There's probably 150 people in the audience. And I brought up this topic of the breakup email. And I mentioned Tom's last name.
Oh,
total mistake. There was a guy in the back of the room. I remember he was wearing a fedora. I don't know why. It was 2018. The dude's wearing a fedora on a Thursday morning. So he comes up to me after my session and says, hey, man, I reached out to Tom on LinkedIn. I told him to leave Chris Peterson alone.
Oh, no.
Immediately called Tom. I said, hey, man, let's set an appointment. I felt terrible for him.
Oh,
and guess what? I've been a regular customer of his for the last 7 years. So,
oh, what a great story.
Friends, the breakup email would have gotten me immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it would have. Friends, we're visiting with Chris Peterson today of Vector Firm and just having a great conversation about professionalism and sales in the security fire alarm life safety space. And as we kind of wind up today, Chris, thinking going forward in the future, everybody starts on the ground floor, but what advice would you give to individuals that are looking to build a career in this field in sales leadership, and what advice might you offer to help them navigate the challenges and seize the opportunities, much like you did?
In sales leadership, that would be. I hope I heard you correctly.
Yeah,
I would love to answer that because it is such a unique space and such an underserved space. What I would recommend to any sales leader for system integrators, whether you're in pro AV, security, life safety, throw everything out that is currently in. And here's where I'm going with this. If I was to come in and somebody said, you have a clean slate and you got this big of a budget, go build a team. I would basically do what Gerald Ford did. And, I would do a distribution of labor in the sales world. I would look at, really having specialties. Let's look at what we have right now. A lot of organizations have salespeople who do a little bit of everything. And here's what they end up doing. 50 to 70% of their time is sitting behind a desk doing estimates right now.
Right.
So, in today's world, where customers want to get all their information and do get all their information from machines and not from human beings.
That's right.
And here's what's happening. That's been going on for almost 20 years now. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The internet has been a business to business tool probably since like 2006 or eight. It's been a consumer tool for longer than that, but it's really gotten into business in the last 20 years.
Sure.
What's happening now is we have a younger generation that is becoming influencers of decisions who's never been in a world where face-to-face communication or voice-to-voice communication is primary. Everything that they know, communication has been written over via a piece of technology. These are our customers now.
Yeah.
So, and now they also have not just tools where you can do all of your own research on, you know, in front of a computer or a phone. You've got these things, this thing called artificial intelligence that can act essentially like a human being for you and do a lot for you.
Right.
So with that said, if anyone thinks that the same model that worked in 1985 or 2005 or 2020 will work today, they're crazy.
Right.
So let's wipe it clean. Let's identify how do we enable our best salespeople to get in front of our accounts. Because if you can get in front of an account in person, it's amazing the difference. That human being, because they're talking to another human being, releases serotonin and dopamine, especially if the salesperson is competent. Mm-hmm. And that salesperson that's in front of their customers, for some reason, the customers like them. I don't know why. Every time I know Michelle's more expensive than everybody else, but boy, I like working with Michelle. That's because Michelle goes out there and sees them.
Right. Yeah.
So if I was a sales leader today, I would devise a team where you have your talent that can get in front of and in a very competent, challenging, authoritative way, earn the respect of these customers where they want to call them instead of going to ChatGPT. Now, how do you do that? You do that by providing support to that person from having estimators do the estimates for them, by providing software where they can, when they're on a job site, they don't have to take 5,000 pictures and spend hours downloading it to the estimator.
Right.
They can have software helping them. They should have some administrative help. They should have some inside sales help. Now you're thinking, how can we afford that? You can afford that because if today the commission, if the comp, not the compensation, but the quota and the goals are $2 million, let's say, a year, it should probably be four.
Yeah.
If I was a sales leader, that's what I would do. I would look at, okay, what I need to do is I need to have my overall compensation of my sales be about 25% of the gross profit I'm generating. So now I'm going to go develop a team that can do that. How am I going to go do that? Instead of saying, you're a salesperson, go sell. No, you're going to go out and you're going to be the human being that's in front of these two vertical markets. You're going to become an expert. You're going to go to every networking event, read every article, and be in front of these top 40 customers in each vertical market. And we're going to own these markets. And you've got an estimator to help you. You've got an inside salesperson to help you, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That's what I would do if I was a sales leader. I would design. And then if you can't do that, which most of the people listening to this can't, then my piece of advice would be to get out in the field and coach your salespeople and work with them on closing opportunities. If you want to really impact your sales team, work on jobs with them because they're going to learn. You're going to win those jobs.
Yep.
And then you're going to teach your salespeople to do it on their own later.
Yeah.
So that's what that's the advice I would give. I would redesign the sales organization. And on a simpler note, get out in the field with your salespeople, develop them, make them better, coach them. Sales is a performance-based career. And if you look at the other performance-based careers,
yeah.
Let's look at professional athletics. Let's look at musicians, performing artists, actors, whatever.
Yep.
They spend 95% of their time practicing, 5% of their time performing.
Bingo.
Salespeople spend 1% of their time practicing, 99% of their time performing.
Yeah.
So
who was it? I think it was Dave Sandler said that sales is a Broadway play put on by a psychiatrist.
That's pretty good.
You know,
that's good.
And I think you probably have got a good point there. Friends, we have had a wonderful conversation with a sales professional, Chris Peterson from Vector Firm. And Chris, thank you for your time today. Thank you for your insights. You are an inspiration to us in the fire life safety space to sell better and to deliver value to our customers, and certainly have appreciated our time here today. So thanks again for joining us.
Oh, awesome. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you having me, man.
Thanks, Chris.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening today. Plan to join us again when our guest will be Marnie Hockenberg of Hockenberg & Associates and the founder of Exec Connect Iowa, and our discussion of the importance of networking and leveraging relationships in today's dynamic business environment.